Welcome to the Lazy Muse Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jimmy G.
I am Eric Grattan.
And we just two guys hanging around. We love to talk about the TV shows and movies that we watch and to try some new beers. And today,
yes, what did you get us today?
Yes, Eric. Well, I brought a Brewer's Share from Full Sail. And I just want to read you the label here because it's almost like Willy Wonka's golden ticket.
Yeah, can you read it utilizing the font?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I think maybe the italics deserves one voice and the fill-in-the-blank Mad Lib section deserves another.
Okay, I'll read the italics.
All right.
This certifies that
you
are the rightful owner of
(1)
Brewer's Share of the
initial public offering
of Full Sail Brewing Company's release
Weissenbach,
a.k.a.
Wendel's Weissen,
of multi box style wheat brew featuring a reddish amber hue and a hint of tropical fruit flavors. Concocted by none other than Wendel Bryant. Now, would that be Wendel?
Wendel, yeah.
Wendel Bryant.
Yes.
It's good.
Das ist gut, yeah.
So, I picked
Wir können das trinken.
Because it's one I like Weissen, and it said it was special.
Yeah, no, and I gotta agree. It's a little dark for a Weiss, usually. Mm. But gosh, it's good.
Yeah, it's a dark wheat beer.
We should say this is 7.2% alcohol by volume. So if we start to slur here towards the end of it, just go ahead and download the next episode where we drink another one right after this.
And Full Sail is an employee-owned company.
Oh, I like that.
The employees get profit share out of it. I know that because when I was looking for a job, Full Sail came up a few times.
And yet... You aren't
a part owner
of a brewer.
All right. Well, let's hop into the podcast.
This is socialist beer we're drinking.
It is a socialist beer. I'm okay with that.
I'm really in. All right. Now it tastes better.
So we're going to head on into the podcast. And, you know, I'm really excited about this. I look forward to getting together with you and talking about these
Jimmy.
Shows.
Yeah.
It's a blast. And I'd love to thank the, you know, the ones of listeners that we have out there.
Oh, they are Legion.
Mom,
by which I mean
awesome.
One person named Legion.
Right.
Not to be confused with the X-Men comic book semi-villain of the same name. Actually,
right,
Charles Xavier's son with Moira Kelly. Actually, not Moira Kelly. Moira McTaggart. I've had three sips of beer.
Right.
And I've already said Moira Kelly when I mean Moira McTaggart, of course.
Thank you, dork.
You're welcome.
So let's get a few thank yous out of the way. Some people have been liking us on the old Facebook.
Oh, what are their names?
We have Q Harrison Sweeney.
I don't know that person.
No, this is a guy that I went to undergrad with at the University of Wyoming.
I know some people at the University of Wyoming. Shout out to Lee Salty.
Lee Salty, what's up? My acting professor.
Yes. And, of course, many of the other folks.
Right. Devin Sanchez. She gave us a big shout out. Her and her movie, 20 Million People, is showcasing all over the country at various independent film festivals. And they've won many awards.
Devin, that's a big cast.
That's right.
Right. Oh, sorry, that was awful and terrible. I don't know you either, but I can't wait to see your movie.
It was just here in Seattle last week
at the
Seattle Independent Film Festival. And my good friend James Weber also gave us a like. And James Weber is a producer in his own right. And in fact, his company has sole rights to Almost Maine.
Oh, really?
And they will be moving into production of that piece this coming fall.
Are you talking film?
Film.
Hey, good for you, James.
Yeah, he's good friends with the writer, James Clary, or...
No.
It's not that. That's the casting
director.
That's
the casting guy.
It's a very similar name, though.
I'm certain it is. Keep talking for a second. Yeah, we'll figure this out.
So they're good friends. They've actually did a short film together called Henry, which is...
John Cariani.
John Cariani.
Is the author. behind.
And he's done. He also has a great play called Cul-de-Sac.
Not to be confused with the film by Roman Polanski and starring the wonderful, what's his freaking name from Halloween?
Jason?
No. You are wrong on like seven levels there.
The doctor?
No, the doctor, yes, but Jason is not Halloween.
Oh.
Are you kidding me?
He's not.
Michael Myers,
right.
Not to be confused with the Canadian funny man of
Friday
a similar
the
13th. Name. Yes.
Excellent. Okay.
Anyway, yes, the doctor, who was also the president in Escape from New York, whose name is not coming to me because I'm a moron.
Oh, right.
Keep going.
So those are three, and there was one more, but now...
James, Devin, and Q, thus far.
James, Devin, and Q.
Donald Pleasance is someone that I was thinking of with the bald man from Halloween. Not at all someone who has liked the podcast, because if I'm not mistaken, he's dead. All right. So thank you, three so far. Who else do we got?
Three so far. I can't remember. I can't remember.
Michael Willoughby Poignand, John Michael Willoughby Poignand.
Yes.
The second of that name, if I'm not mistaken, has expressed joy with our podcast as well.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you, Poignand.
Yes. Thank you, Poignand.
So, the Lazy Muse Podcast, Episode 7, Game of Thrones, The Bear, and The Maiden Fair.
I like it better when you say Game of Thrones in that other voice.
Game of Thrones.
That's the one. That
the Game of Thrones. So, my friend, Justin Segnar, came up with that. And he used to call me a dork because I would talk about Game of Thrones.
And he would say, Game of Thrones.
How's Game of Thrones? Your Game of Thrones book.
Which is exactly the tone my girlfriend uses when she talks about it. But she calls it incest boobies.
Incest boobies. But, he actually confessed to me one night at the beer garden in my beloved Astoria,
the Bohemian
Queens.
Beer garden.
That's right.
Yes.
He said, so...
Does he have a mustache?
Game of Thrones.
Does he have a mustache and various forms of...
He does not. He's not from Brooklyn. He's from Queens.
All right. I'm just saying. So, a lot of people in that area, in that particular bar, look like they're from Brooklyn.
No, this guy's, he's true. No hipster for him.
I once peed on the tree there because I needed to pee and they were closing and they wouldn't let me inside. And I really needed to go inside and the bouncer said no. And
no.
I said, I really need to pee.
Well,
he said no.
Nazis,
why don't you just pee on the tree?
Yeah.
And he turned around and I peed on the tree.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I
was there when they opened that day, by the way. I spent a long time at the beer garden.
Wait, open? What do you mean?
I got there half an hour before they started serving.
I got you.
And I left half an hour after they stopped serving.
Right, okay. The day they opened. Right.
I was not someone who was cooperating with authority by the end of that evening.
Right. Which you're close to that attitude when you're sober.
Yes. Yes, I am.
So, anyways, my friend Justin finally came around. He watched it, and then he told me. So I downloaded all of the episodes, and he and his girlfriend watched every single one over the course of a weekend. So
Justin,
he apologized for making fun of me.
That is beautiful, Justin. That's why this relationship between yourself and Jimmy works so well.
It does. And Justin actually has an app on at the iTunes App Store called
Pimp It.
Oh Snap. It is a time-lapse photography app. And it's brilliant. And
it sounds brilliant.
He's sold a great many of these apps. This particular
he's
one.
Charging
and he's doing
for
very well. It costs $1.99.
Fascist.
And
fascist,
it's
Justin,
well
take
worth
it all
it.
Back.
You have a free version, but it's, of course, it's not as beefed up as the full one.
No,
and
I'll buy
it's
it.
A great little app.
I'm kidding, Justin. I'm sorry. I will buy your app. It sounds wonderful.
So. We are
yes.
10 minutes in.
Yes, let's say our first words about Game of Thrones, shall we?
So this was directed by Michelle MacLaren, and she is an executive producer of Breaking Bad and in earlier work, The X-Files.
I love this. And who wrote this one,
and this
Jimmy
episode
G?
Was actually written by none other than George R.R. Martin.
I always feel like I need to do a seal sound.
Please.
Like it's George R.R. Martin. And I know that's just stupid because that's what I am, but I'm sorry, George. I love you and your work, but I feel like I need to seal out in the middle of your name.
I'd love to know what the RR stands for.
I don't want to know. I'm sure we could find out pretty quickly, but I don't want to know.
Let's keep it up. Yeah. So this episode, you know, it's written by the authors. So if you don't like it, if you don't like what happens, if
every
you don't like what
was... episode is written by the authors.
Right, the author of the book. Thank you.
Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry. Let you get a thought out.
Yes. So if you don't like this episode, if you take umbrage or issue with what was left out of the book, too bad about you, because the guy who wrote the book decided to leave what was out.
Yes.
So moving on into the show, we have scene one, the lovers, Ygritte and John.
We do.
And,
though Ygritte seems to be avoiding that particular word, does she not? At least initially.
The
word love. She's avoiding that. It's just,
wildling, man.
Two consensual semi-adults rolling around naked.
They don't have these lovey-dovey feelings, you know?
Wildlings. Just follow their whatever.
So, in the episode... The Climb.
Yeah.
We saw everybody that was in Tormund's group die.
Yes.
With the exception of...
Tormund, big red hair, big red beard.
Right.
Yes.
So Tormund lived, John, Ygritte,
husband to bears.
And Orel.
Thank you. I prefer Orel to Oral.
I think it's actually probably the correct pronunciation.
I don't know.
Orel. So those four are the only ones who lived out of his group. But when we meet them now, there's a pretty large group of wildlings with them. So were these guys other climbers further down the wall that we just didn't see?
This is possible. I mean, I always just assume that there's more than one team giving this a go. Do you know?
Mm.
And plausible deniability being what it is and as useful as it can be.
Right.
If only one team makes it and doesn't know about the others, fine. If they do, fine. You know, throughout the series, we've seen lone wildlings or small groups of wildlings anyway, so you got to assume they get up and over one way or another.
One lone wildling? Osha.
No longer so lone.
So
still plenty wild.
I only bring that up because of an early episode when we had a debate as to how to pronounce that, and I think, again, you're right, because we have Asha. A-S-H-A.
Yes.
So if we have Asha with an A, then with the O, I guess we just have to
go with
the OSHA.
It's got to be the Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Right.
It's a
government branch that Martin feels very keenly about.
Yeah,
I think he's just making a nod to
it. They do a heck of a job, Jimmy.
You know, so tangent here.
Oh, please.
I saw Martin give a speech at... Town Hall, which is this great forum here in Seattle where all kinds of people are invited in to speak.
Yes. This was last year, was it not?
This was last year. So, and Martin did confirm that he, in fact, makes a nod to the New York Football Giants beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Well played.
So, in the book, it's in Tyrion's first chapter in A Dance with Dragons. So check it out. Once you see it, it's pretty obvious about the giant beating the Patriots. He uses those words, but the giant means something else.
And did you ask this question?
I did not. Somebody else did. I don't ask questions like that.
Did you ask a question?
I don't.
I once asked Orson Scott Card Orson Scott Card, in addition to being a fantastic writer, is something of a kind of bigot and jackass. Not my terms, just the terms of everybody else who listens to what the guy opines. But I once was at a question and answer session with him, and since he founded a couple of theaters in Utah and had written for the stage, I asked him, you know, what, if any, influences his background in stage had in his writing. He said, no, nothing, moving on. And I went, okay.
Wow.
It was a wonderful moment from me and a writer whose work I had admired.
Right. You were crushed.
I look like Michael Cera walking home with the Charlie Brown theme behind it.
Right. So your heroes are always assholes, kids. That's
yes. Oh, I could tell you about the Tim Curry
No, don't. My mom listens to this,
yeah,
and she loves Tim Curry.
I love Tim Curry, but I can tell you about a moment that he shouldn't be proud of. But I won't.
Okay. I don't want to ruin my mom's hero.
No.
So, we have an interesting line here by Jon Snow. He says, "No, you'll just light the biggest fire the North has ever seen to let them know you're coming." To which Ygritte responds, "You know nothing, Jon Snow."
She responds that way a lot.
A lot, but it always means something. It's either commenting on, you know, his innocence or literally him being naive.
Or being left out of a key piece of information,
right,
perhaps.
Right. Yes. Thank you. It was a beautiful tie-in, our transition.
Thank you, Jim.
We don't want to give any spoilers here because I have a feeling of what she might be alluding to.
Sure.
Did you get that same feeling? Like, it's not as literal as Mance may have sounded.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that. Okay. I think that this thing we're not talking about will be brought up
pretty soon.
Pretty soon. And we'll know what whether she meant that or not. I can see that. I can also see that, you know, it's a buzzword throughout the books. And, you know, much like It Is Known or Winter Is Coming, You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, is what we want to hear at least once in every scene that those two have together.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's not really in any way pandering to the fans of the book. This is probably in every scene they're in together in the book.
Right.
So there needs to be this idea that Ygritte is not only good for John emotionally and good for John in ways like that, but she's good for John because she's smarter and much more streetwise than
yes.
he is.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like, yeah, because I would say I don't think she's smarter, but she definitely is streetwise.
Not book smarter, certainly. She probably can't read, but, you know,
like you
what
said,
the hell?
Streetwise. Yeah. She knows how to get
pathwise.
She's pathwise.
She's pathwise.
So, and now we have, you know, John in this scene confronts Orwell.
Yes.
And, you know, what I liked is I'm having a hard time with Orwell. It's hard for me to say for some reason.
Yes.
But Orwell.
You can go back to saying Orwell.
He doesn't get in a pissing match with John, which I thought was just a really nice touch that he's not trying to be a tough guy or anything like that.
I think you're right. I think we agree that Orwell, as played by Mackenzie Crook and directed by whoever's directing it, in this case Michelle MacLaren, is much more interesting than the Orwell in the book. In the book, he comes across as just kind of a jerk.
Right.
You know, and in this, Mackenzie Crook has kind of made a living out of playing characters who find it difficult to express themselves with words. And that's tough because he's clearly a very smart guy, well-spoken actor. But it's terrific to watch him struggle to express a feeling that he recognizes and experiences fully and try to put that into words. He can't do it. And this is a great scene that exemplifies that. And there's another one we'll talk about a little bit later in this podcast.
So I don't need to add to that. It's better than I would have said it.
I think so.
In the forums, I had read something that I don't know. It's true.
Where are these forums, Jimmy? Are these on the Wiki of Ice and Fire?
Is that the Wiki of Ice and Fire?
Yeah, dorks.
Yeah.
Thank you, dorks.
So there was something that had come up saying, is Orwell in the books? Or is it, I don't know how to say his name, Vermeer Sixskins?
Right. I assumed it was him.
Okay. Who actually is dead by this point then?
I didn't think so. I thought he was later on.
No, you're right.
He's later on.
You're absolutely right. Okay.
His death becomes very important.
Yes, it does. Yes, thank you. Okay, so, really lovely scene there. And if we could go back here, and I'll probably edit this, what's your overall feeling?
I hope
feeling?
You don't edit it, because then everybody gets to hear, and I think we'll probably edit this.
Okay.
Don't edit this.
What
this
was your
gold.
Overall feeling for the show?
I really liked this episode. I thought, you know, we've talked off and on with just about every episode about moments that we've been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
And the title of this episode made me very happy.
Yes.
Because it refers to a moment that I've been waiting for since I read it in the book.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I found it very difficult to believe that they were going to make a TV series or a movie about this when I was reading the books first.
Interesting.
Like, what, 15 years ago?
Right.
You know. I would never have thought. It's just too sweeping, too long, too epic, too complicated. And the idea that someone would spend the millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars necessary to do any sort of justice to it seemed completely wrong. They'd do something like they did with Legend of the Seeker, you know, which was
a
crap series based on an okay series of books that gradually got much, much, much worse.
Right.
Well, you know, it eventually became a right-wing...
Right. When you have a conservative fantasy writer, it's going to go
There are tons of conservative fantasy writers.
There's
a ton of conservative fantasy writers. It's all about... You know,
but do they dedicate their books to the Central Intelligence Agency?
Yeah, no, there's your bullseye. I mean, every fantasy book is about personal responsibility and, you know, it's all wet dreams by white conservative dudes. That's what every fantasy book is.
Is there a fantasy book written by a dark-skinned person?
Of course.
What is
several.
It?
I have no idea. I have no idea what anybody who writes my books looks like. Except my amazing cousin, Tessa, who has several fantasy-type books on your shelves, which you should check out.
Mm.
I'm going to do a quick plug here for Tessa Grattan, who has the Blood Journals out there, with two books of which are currently published by Random House. And she has The United States of Asgard, Book 1, coming out, I believe, this month. If I'm not mistaken, if I am mistaken, I'm a jerk. But this is an alternate history and current events, as if instead of England and Dutch, English and Dutch influence, the United States was founded on the influence of the Norse countries. And so instead of Judeo-Christian values and mythology, we are completely surrounded by the descendants of Norse mythology
and or
religion.
Odin,
Thor,
these guys,
Hera, not Hera. I'm sorry, I've just switched.
No, yeah, that's Roman,
right? All these people.
Okay, yeah, that's fantastic.
So
thank you.
Tessa Grattan, check her out. All right, back to Game of Thrones.
So who would you give? What do you want to rate it, and what house would you give this?
Would give this a full house. Are you ready for this? 2 gold coins and 3 sapphires. Boom.
Bam.
Nailed it.
Nice. So what's the 2 gold coins?
I think that Jaime Lannister has done a pretty good job of his initial transformation from complete colostomy bag into semi-understandable, semi-rootable hero in the show.
Right. Okay.
This is his initial foray into the idea of not being a black hat villain.
Right. And the sapphires, of course, are for Tarth.
Are for Brienne, who is a badass. The combat stuff keeps getting better. And
agreed.
It's fascinating how many different ways it could have gone, a duel between a very large woman with a wooden sword and a much larger bear one-on-one in the pit. And they did it really well.
I absolutely agree. And I think we need to, give some props to Bart.
Yes, that was Bart again.
Bart
the
bear.
How old is Bart at this point?
I don't know.
At this point, Bart's got to be like 129 years old.
But, you know, I wish I worked as often as he does.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen his butt shot off. You know, we've seen him fight.
What did we see? Let's list credits here, Eric.
Oh, Bart got his butt shot off in The Great Outdoors, starring Dan Aykroyd and the
John
immortal John Candy. Well,
hello.
He's not technically immortal because he's a great dead guy, but awesome. And do you remember who played John Candy's wife in this wonderful movie?
Oh, no.
The amazing and wonderful Annette Bening.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure Emmett Walsh makes an appearance in this one, too, but I'll have to double check that. Anyway, really awful movie. Terrible. But wonderful. Well, yeah, we were 10.
Yeah.
You know, 12. It was made for us.
I mean, this is back when John Candy would come out with a summer movie every year.
Sometimes called Summer Rental and sometimes called The Great Outdoors.
One Crazy Summer, was he in that?
No,
that was John Cusack.
That was, they're very similar. They're very similar, yes. And the great John Matuzak. Lots of Johns.
Right.
Do you remember John Matuzak?
I don't.
Draft pick by the Kansas City Chiefs, traded to the Oakland Raiders. Traded to the Oakland Raiders and became a dominant force on their defensive line in the 70s and 80s.
If you haven't picked this up...
he also played Sloth.
Mr. Eric Gratton is of the Kansas City Grattons.
Yes. Formerly of the County Leitrim and Roscommon Groutons, but we won't speak of them as much as I love them.
Okay.
Their history is a little fraught at this moment, if we go back to the Troubles. Yes.
So I really enjoyed this episode. Bart the Bear. As well.
And also went after Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin in The Edge.
This bear works.
Bart does good work.
He works. So bravo to Bart. I would give this episode 4 lions.
Ooh. Oh, can we talk for a second?
Yeah.
I've just typed in Bart the Bear and he died 13 years ago.
So this is a different Bart the Bear.
There's another Bart the Bear?
Yeah, he's listed in the credits as Bart the Bear.
Well, this one says, according to Wikipedia, Bart the Bear died in May 10th, 2000.
I rely on IMDb, which is like a Wikipedia page, so these guys
John
can be...
John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, Daryl Hannah, and Danny...
Totally wrong.
Ethan Hawke, Steven Seagal, Gregory Peck, Brad Pitt, Alec Baldwin, and Anthony Hopkins all appeared with Bart the Bear.
Yeah, well, IMDb has, and Bart, come on, maybe this is Bart the Bear 14.
Yeah, is there a Lassie IMDb page? I bet there is.
So
whatever IMDb tells you, Bart the Bear died 13 years ago, people.
Well, that Bart the Bear. This could be a different Bart the Bear.
Yes, but this Bart the Bear then did not work with Annette Bening and John Candy.
That's true. It's not...
Oh, okay, here we go. Bart the Bear 1 and Bart the Bear 2, who also appeared in Into the Wild. So this bear has done
stuff. I could
Sean
tell.
Sean Penn has directed this bear.
I could tell this bear has some chops, you know? He might not be the original, but this guy, he had skills. You could tell.
He's like, in We Bought a Zoo and Zookeeper. He has worked with Matt Damon and Kevin James.
Yeah. See, this guy's got skills, too. Yes. So, you know, bravo to you, Bart the Bear, number two.
Number two.
You got nothing to be ashamed of. You're living up to the name.
It's his son. It'd be awesome.
All right. So, like you, I enjoyed this episode, and I'd give it 4 lions, because that's...
It's his cousin.
That's the sigil.
Right. 4 lions.
That's the sigil of House Lannister. And I give it to House Lannister for the same reasons.
For Jaime.
For what he did.
I give more to the Sapphires because, you know, Brienne's the one who fought the bear.
Right.
I respect this. Jaime is the main character in the story.
I absolutely agree. I mean, she was holding off the bear. She got that nasty cut.
Oh, yeah. She got punched in the face.
She got punched, man.
Bear.
She got bear slapped.
The bear blocked with his right hand and punched with his left.
You try choreographing a bear.
That's right.
But that guy's worked with Sean Penn, so he knows.
Yes.
He knows what to do.
Perfectionist.
But I give it to Jaime, and we'll talk more about that scene when we get to it.
Are we going
to
title this episode Game of Thrones Maiden, Fair, and the Bear? Or are we going to call it Game of Thrones Bart the Bear? We got to call it Bart the Bear.
Bart the Bear? Yeah, we'll
call
it Bart the Bear.
Spent a lot of Bart the Bear talk.
Well, when you're working with the best.
All right.
So scene two.
Or the best cousin.
Or the best cousin. Well, no, he's good.
He's very good.
Rob and Talisa. You know, some booty time for King of the North.
Yes.
This scene has gotten a lot of flack on the the forums.
Why?
Well, for the same reason that you get flack from your girlfriend with incest boobies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people are talking about in-laws watching the show with them, and you got this, continuous ass shot.
Well, yeah. No, the problem I always have with this, and I was talking to my girlfriend about this, because she doesn't believe me at all that the reason I watch the show is not boobies and butt.
Right.
She honestly believes that that's the only reason I watch the show. And that's a fair cop. That's a fair cop. But the thing is, when people have sex on broadcast television, they do it with boxers on and panties and bra on.
Right, they're not full nudity.
Right, never. But the thing is, there is some weird thing that we have in this country, and it's not shared in most of Europe. It's shared and topped in Britain, except in the newspapers.
In Holland.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
One of their local stations is a porn station.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Holland
gets
it.
All out.
I'm saying in Britain, they put boobs in their newspaper and on television, but oh my gosh, I mean, you know. You're still expected to dress with long sleeves and a turtleneck.
Right.
What I'm saying is that we're still very happy in a sex scene here to show as much boobs and butt of the woman as possible. And when they show a butt from a guy, it's like, oh, my God. Exactly. So what's the problem with making the world as comfortable with nudity as we all are in our day-to-day lives? We fucking get home, throw all our fucking clothes off and right. wander around.
I'm not wearing pants right now.
I can't see, and I'm not looking because there's a table between us, but he's probably telling the truth. So what I'm saying is I wouldn't have had any problem with it at all if he hadn't gotten fully dressed to go over to his laptop and, you know, hang out at the you know, while she dictates a letter to her iPhone.
Right.
You know. It's just weird.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, I don't care. I don't care if it was there or if it wasn't, you know?
True.
It's,
Can we talk for a second since, I mean, let's keep talking about this, but we need to spend a few moments on Una Chapman.
Yeah. Let's talk about Una.
Well.
What has she done?
Oh, she's done a ton. She's, you know, the first time I really paid any attention to her was Quantum of Solace. But The Devil's Double is a movie that you need to see if you haven't. It's on Netflix instant, and it's worth watching. But really what's interesting is in this, she's incredibly underused as an actor because she's actually very good. But the character's not very big in the books. But if I could choose a family to come from, I would choose one of two of hers. I mean, my God. She is the granddaughter of Charlie Chaplin.
Mm.
She is the great-granddaughter of Eugene O'Neill.
Holy cow.
Right? You just went full, like, Harry Carey on us. You just went, holy cow! This is what happens here. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I would either choose that, or I would choose a terrific actor who's working a lot in American television right now, named Lily Rabe. Do you know her?
No.
She was a lead on the second season of American Horror Story, which I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the first season, she was terrific in a supporting role. But her mother is Jill Clayburgh, who was a great dead lady. She's wonderful, one of the greatest actors of Hollywood history, in my opinion. And her dad, can you guess?
Gregory Peck.
No, what's her name? I just said Lily
Rabe. Oh, Rabe? No.
David Rabe.
The playwright?
Yes, it's her dad.
Wow.
Those are the two people whose families I incredibly envy. That's kind of amazing. I have no idea, no. Una and Lily, what your family lives were like growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
But the work that your family has done, and both of you so far, fantastic.
Right.
All right, moving on.
Well, hold on.
Yeah.
Small world.
Small world, yes.
David Rabe.
Yes, hit me.
I did a summer at Illinois Shakespeare Festival. And one of my,
I saw several shows there in 99, I think it was. Maybe
a couple years before me. Yeah. My summer we did King John, Taming of the
Shrew.
Were
you 2001?
I think that sounds about right.
Did you know Jennifer Schneiderman?
I'm not sure.
She was there at that point. That summer, I think.
I'm pretty sure.
Anyway,
it might have been 2000. Anyways, one of my roommates, his name's Christopher. He very quiet, withdrawn. He just wouldn't hang out with anybody.
Right.
Just not very gregarious.
Sure.
Which is rare among a company of actors.
Sure.
Well, this guy, turns out, I get free tickets.
More
10
gregarious
years later.
Than gregarious, right. Am I right? All right, moving on.
10 years later, I get tickets to free tickets because I'm working at a hotel, concierge tickets,
right.
to go see Master Harold and the Boys.
And the Boys.
And
terrific play.
This guy's in it. So it's a 3-man play.
Sure.
So that means you're, you know, one of the top billed actors, although...
Does he play...
The only white kid in the show.
He plays the Matthew Broderick
right.
role.
So this turns out this guy, after college, he wrote a couple plays that David Rabe got a hold of. And he really enjoyed them.
That's pretty cool.
So he introduced, David Ray introduced him to his agents and said, I want you to take care of this guy.
and by the way, he's an actor on Broadway now.
Right. Yeah. And so, boom, actor on Broadway. And then, you know, I've seen him in two other movies.
Good.
The movie several years ago with Tom Hanks and...
Hit me.
He's one of my favorite actors.
Person?
The blonde guy from The Big Lebowski. The
Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yes, Philip Seymour
okay.
Hoffman, yeah, and Julia Roberts, that
oh yeah,
sort of
the
line.
when they're
right,
Christopher Charlie
Denham
Wilson's
is
war.
The guy's name,
Charlie
Christopher
Wilson's
Denham,
R.I.P. Charlie
right.
Wilson,
and he's
died.
In Argo, so
well, good for him.
There you go, good for him. Quiet guy, turned out to have enviable career from my standpoint. But
oh, you envy him, do you?
Sure, I wish I was doing small bits of movies.
Yeah, you're right. Me too.
All right, so in scene two, we're 37 minutes in. We're at scene two.
Well, let's move it along.
So,
we've told all our friends you don't have to actually watch Game of Thrones to listen
subscribe.
To the podcast. All right.
So we learned that Talisa is pregnant.
Yeah.
She's knocked up.
Yes.
Rob's the baby daddy.
Yes. We can only assume.
So, you know, I think this is really just, this is all set up. This is all fodder.
Yes. For what,
you know,
Jimmy?
Well, we won't say.
No.
But, you know, it's just endearing us to them. I think they're trying to spend time to really make us care for these two people.
Well, I think it's a mixture of that. It's nice to see that Rob has someone that he is confiding in that seems to treat him as an equal.
Right.
And he... repays it, but they're also setting up some mysterious moments
right
from her, because she's writing to her mother, if she is. We can't read Valerian. We don't know what she's writing.
Right.
You know, there
right.
there are pauses and innuendo, and we're not quite sure if we're supposed to now distrust her.
Oh, really?
I
did
felt
not
like that.
Get that at
I felt,
all.
And, correct me if I'm wrong, dorks, but those of you who haven't read the books... I want to know what you thought that scene was about.
Right.
Because to me, if I hadn't read the books, I would now have doubts in my head as to what her motivations are. And Una, if you're listening, why don't you just tell us what you think your motivations are? Because
okay.
who knows better than you?
That's I didn't pick that up at all.
It's all right. I'm very subtle.
So, all right. So moving on to scene three, we have some sex advice from Tormund Giantsbane.
Husband of Bears.
Husband of Bears, talking about fucking dogs.
We'll say again that Christopher, you want to try to pronounce this one this time? I think I said
Hivju. Christopher Hivju.
I think that's what I said, too. He's a really fun actor, and really the only reason to watch this new version of The Thing that came out a couple years ago.
Right, you had mentioned that last episode. Yeah. And here we have Aurel confessing his love to Ygritte.
I love this scene.
Yeah. Not in the books.
No.
But...
I don't think...
You've
read them.
I've read them several times.
Yeah.
But neither one of these characters have a point of view chapter. And so it'd be in a John. I did follow the John arc throughout
it'd
the book.
It'd be tough to the eavesdrop on them.
Right. But I don't remember this ever happening. Because, you know, I have a hard time imagining how it would.
Right.
Because John would have to be in proximity for us to hear a private conversation between
right.
the two. But I liked it. I thought it really brings some interesting perspective of the Wildlings.
And I'm curious where it leads as we follow Aurel and what happens in the next couple seasons to
because
this
it's right and it's such a nice setup because we've seen if you've read the books you notice the divergence of some of the story with John and Ygritte.
Yes.
And this sort of is tantalizing as to how they may resolve it, or you know, it makes it unpredictable how they're going to go with that storyline.
Oh, I think you're right.
So it was fun to watch it. And like you said, I really dig this guy. Mackenzie Crook. I mean, this is...
He's wonderful.
Just fun to watch him.
And he's been around now for, almost 15 years in terms of in the semi-national consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all come to love Dwight Schrute, right? But,
right.
But that's... a character that is in many, many ways based on some work that Mackenzie Crook did starting in 2001 as Gareth. You know, it's very much the same character. And while Rainn Wilson is fantastic and has made it his own, Mackenzie Crook's Gareth in the original Office is incredibly worth seeing if you haven't.
Yeah, check it out. So scene four, we have...
Plus, if you can get a hold of the Merchant of Venice he did, like circa 04, 05, he's Lancelot. Gabo, and I highly recommend it. It's not a great movie, but it's the one with Pacino and Jeremy Irons and Joseph Fiennes. Mackenzie Crook is terrific in it.
Ooh, Joseph Fiennes, nice. So scene four, we have Marjorie and Sansa. We have here, Sansa maybe starting to understand how terrible she is at this game.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating how subtly Margaery points it out to her. It's in this scene, it's kind of like Margaery is saying, look, I know this a lot better than you do, so let me just lay it out for you very kindly. Let me just lay it out for you very kindly. The best you're ever going to do... is Tyrion.
Right. Well,
and it's true.
She tries to warm her up to the idea that Tyrion isn't that bad.
Well, and underneath there, somewhere, there's this idea that it's Tyrion or they're just going to kill you. I mean, this is what you got.
Listen, I absolutely agree. But I think we need to have a little discussion here about Margaery's line. He's rather good looking, even with the scar. Especially with the scar.
Oh, so we're going back to the replacements here. We're hitting a little bit of the...
the series is calling out the fact that this guy is hot. That Peter Dinklage is hot.
We've talked about this.
And, you know, you're not getting
you're
such
obsessed.
A bad deal here.
Sure.
You're not getting a bad deal because this is a good-looking short guy.
Yes.
I mean, the series itself has said, you know what... The book, he's a monstrous, disgusting toad. In the series, he's just short. That's it. He's
no,
just a short
absolutely.
Guy.
No, and that's huge. But this is exactly... I think that we shouldn't forget that this is also a semi-direct quote from The Replacements.
Hit me.
You don't know this?
No.
You don't know this.
I don't know this.
You don't know the Chicks Dig Scars speech.
Oh, no, I don't.
I mean, this is a terrible movie. You know that, right?
What's The Replacements?
The Replacements is a Keanu Reeves joint.
Oh.
Right? Where the NFL goes on strike, and they get replacement players, and Gene Hackman coaches them up, and the team consists of, like, Reese Ephens and Keanu Reeves and Jon Favreau, and they
I'm
go out and
so
win.
Sorry,
but the climax of the entire freaking movie is a speech that ends with pain heals, chicks dig scars, glory lasts forever. So I do think it's an interesting line that Margaery has, but it's old. It's old, especially with the scar. It's old. It's an old line.
And I wouldn't care about it.
I got no problem with you, George. I got no problem. I think you're amazing. And I kind of like that movie too. Guilty pleasure.
I think it just, It makes me feel good about our argument from a few episodes ago.
Yes. There was no argument. I never said
debate,
that I think...
Our spirited debate.
Yeah, I never said Peter Dinklage is a troll. I mean, what do you want from me? I think he's amazing, and he's much better looking than I am.
That or me. But yeah.
Clearly.
It does affect, you know, this whole thing about how terrible... It's not a terrible match.
No, of course not.
I mean, for a 16-year-old girl, it's kind of terrible at first, but she'll grow
out
of that.
Well, for a 16-year-old girl who is 6 foot tall,
right.
You know, it's tough.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and then, you know, I just love that the tagline to this, "Yes, sweet girl, my mother taught me." Yeah. I mean, it perfectly sums up sort of the denseness of Sansa. And I think, you know, both Natalie Dormer, who plays Marjorie,
right,
and Sophie Turner do a great job at playing their perspective roles here.
They do, absolutely.
And, you know, just from an actor's point of view, it's hard, especially for a young actor, to play the person who's not as smart. It's hard not to want to be the one who's in on it and has the answers. And she does. And Sophie Turner doesn't, as Sansa. Her question was like, did your mother teach you? She asks that very earnestly, as if, where else could you know this? Certainly not from sleeping with a bunch of guys.
No, all true. All true.
So, you know, bravo to those two ladies for, you know, doing what you're supposed to do. Living believably in imaginary circumstances. boom. That phrase cost me $70,000.
It did.
So, moving on.
Shall I start singing Happy Birthday? You want to spend some more money?
So, going on to scene 5, we have Bronn, who tries to convince Tyrion that it's okay to want to bed Sansa. So we sort of have a mirrored image of, you know, Margaery telling Sansa's not so bad, and then Bronn telling Tyrion, hey, she's a good-looking gal, man. This is this is what we do in this day of age. Go
Take
ahead.
It, use it, mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel good about it. And, you know, it's fun. And we have this little thing here about a little throwaway line. How did marrying a whore work out for you the first time?
Yes.
Did they mention this in the first or second season?
I don't know.
I don't remember either.
I feel like they have alluded to it before. I feel like there's been a moment between Jaime and Tyrion where it's been alluded to,
mm-hmm.
or between Tyrion and one of his paid ladies of the evening.
But we don't know.
But no, I'm pretty sure he has not told the whole story.
Right. So in the books...
Yes. Read the books, by the way.
Read the books.
Read the books.
You don't want to read the books.
Read the books. At least by this point, you should have read the first 2.5 books.
Right.
You know, if you want to keep it at a steady stream so that it's the same level as the series, totally understandable. But at this point, you have 2.5 books to read.
Yeah, read the books. There's no reason not to. But Tyrion does explain what happened between... or what happened with this first marriage to a whore. And he does tell Bronn, and it happens in the first book in A Game of Thrones. He tells...
It's a good title.
He confides to Bronn the story
This is while they're on the road back from...
Exactly. In the mountains.
The Aerie.
Right, yes. In the mountains. So Bronn has been bought away from Catelyn Stark... And has begun his employ with Tyrion.
Of House Lannister.
Of House Lannister.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, in brief...
Of Casterly Rock.
Of Casterly Rock. So Tyrion's 13 years old. He's drunk. He meets
Oh, you're going to tell the story.
And, you know...
Tell it.
I won't tell it all. I'll just let you know his first wife was a whore. And she came to a bad end. And the reason why Tyrion is so obsessed with Shay not being found out.
I don't
out,
think she was.
No, she absolutely was. Oh, she was paid for by Jaime. He's shaking his head. What are you saying?
You need to go back and reread the entire series of books.
No, I just reread
it. You're missing a scene where Jaime talks to Tyrion later.
Oh, right. But he still paid her.
Okay.
What are you saying? I didn't go back and reread the later one.
I remember. You need to go back and reread the later one.
Well, so at this point, what Tyrion
I'm pretty sure Tywin is behind the whole thing, and what Tyrion believes is not what happened at this point.
Okay.
Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, you are.
All right.
You are. So, okay, but so still at this point, what Tyrion believes...
Yes, what Tyrion
is
believes.
...is that his first wife was a prostitute, unbeknownst to him at the time.
Right.
And she comes to a bad end at the hands of Tywin Lannister.
Yes.
And this is the reason why he is so... adamant about Shay, protecting Shay, not letting Shay be found out, because he knows what his father will do.
Yes.
He's done it before.
Certainly.
And it's, you know, regardless of how it played out, you know, ultimately, what happened is, you know, is set in stone, that this young woman came to a very bad end because of Tywin Lannister.
Yes.
So he's, you know, it's important in that Tyrion doesn't want this to happen to Shay. He's trying to protect her when he tells her, you know, like, you cannot be found out. It's not because of, you know, my dad says he's gonna kill you.
Right.
He's very serious.
Yes, he is. While you were just giving that wonderful monologue,
<Thank you. laughs>
I was looking up Tysha, who is the Crofter's daughter that Tyrion fell in love with and married. And I think, in fact, I know at this point, thanks to our dorks at the Wiki of Ice and Fire, that you're completely wrong about who she was.
Fantastic.
All right. So you need to go back and reread the later things.
I'm not wrong what happens to her.
No, you're absolutely right about what happens to her, and you're absolutely right that that at this point, everything that you just said is what Tyrion believes.
Right.
Yes.
So what I'm wrong about, it's not... She wasn't a whore. She actually did love him.
Yes. You need to go back and read A Storm of Swords. And you remember when... we'll get there.
This is a Jaime point of view.
Yes.
I will. Absolutely. I'll do that later today. Okay, so moving on to scene six, we have Tywin. You know, he spanks the king. He spanks
Joffrey. He does. And
you know,
he needs it.
The only thing really that I take away from this that I liked was I like seeing a bully get bullied. So
yes,
we get to see Joffrey pushed around, and he's afraid.
Yes.
And I enjoy
it. And he is 100% the king in name only.
Right. But we do see, because there was an interesting thing, I guess, for me when Tywin came in, I didn't know what exactly was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew, because in the books, Tywin does sort of confront Joffrey, but I didn't know exactly where they're going to go with this scene, but, you know, there's two Kingsguards standing in there.
Yes.
So I knew, it was like, well, he can't really push us too far because supposedly the Kingsguard are going to... that was my question.
Right.
Will the Kingsguard stand up for Joffrey, or are they going to say...
He's reacting to my facial expression,
right,
which was looking like, you're going down a line that I think is bullshit.
Oh, well, I don't think it's bullshit.
No,
it's a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question that I think would not happen. I think that this Kingsguard is not the Kingsguard that was there under Arthur Dent or Barristan Selmy. Yeah, sorry, Arthur Dane.
Right.
Arthur Dent, for everyone who is not aware of the dork cachet with that name, is the main character from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning, or Sir Barristan Selmy, they would have protected
the king,
Joffrey,
regardless.
But these guys are like Meryn Trout,
whatever.
And whatever his name is. These are jackasses who are there to get paid and drunk
and whatever.
Laid. So
right.
I really think that they would be with Tywin over Joffrey.
So yeah, but I mean, I was wondering where they would go, and he doesn't push it as
far.
No,
he does not.
You know,
you are right.
And there was that sort of tension of I felt that he's
going to
put this guy in his place,
way.
But he's not going to hit him. He's not, you know, he gives him everything he wants, but begrudgingly, and with the, you know, sort of addendum is, I will let you know what you need to know if it's important.
Right. And it's quite possible that if Joffrey had said, no, fuck this, kill this guy, that they might have.
Maybe, right.
But Tywin knows enough about children from his line he's going to get this kid in line.
And I guess literally from his line, because there's no other genes.
No.
They're all his.
They're all his.
And I love his little, your grace, like an afterthought. Yeah. Like, oh, right. You have a, you know, I have a way of addressing you.
Yeah.
And I'll allow it. I'll allow you that. Okay.
So you have exactly as much as I give you and no more. Right. And don't forget it ever.
Right.
Well, which what's is, his, I just stole that from the Coen brothers, but yeah.
Is, his line, you are being counseled at this very moment.
Yeah. This is nice. This is the guy who's telling you how it is.
Right. Okay, so scene 7, Yunkai.
Yunkai.
The Yellow City.
That's what it's called.
You know, 200,000 reasons why she wants to take this city. You know,
yes.
She really doesn't like slavery.
She hates slavery a lot. Because her brother sold her to her ex-husband.
Right.
Even though she came to love him.
Right.
Not cool.
Her sun and stars.
Yes.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, which yes. I don't even need to say that.
Sometimes we're wrong.
On the way to Yunkai, isn't this the point where we see the hundreds of people strewn up with the air, you know, their hands pointed in the opposite direction? Like, don't go this way?
Right, right. The not strung up. Impaled.
Impaled, right. Like crucified, almost.
Worse.
Is this the city? Like or people, am I thinking people, of a different one?
Like, no, I think this is it, but I'm not sure.
All right. So, anyways, yeah. We see, you know, we get a nice little pissing match between Razdar and Daenerys Stormborn here.
Yes. It's a great last name.
Stormborn?
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, how they use it. It's really wonderful. It's not her last name, but that's what they call her.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know, I enjoyed the scene. And it just...
it's fine.
For a book reader, it's just setting you up. It's just setting you up for the stuff that's about to be revealed.
Yes.
And at the end of the scene, we had an inclination of that. When Danny asked, do you know what he means by great powers? And Jorah has an acting moment where he goes, I don't know. Dun, dun, dun. You know, might as well have been a little quote box above
right,
his head.
Right.
Didn't
we assume that in the last episode that we talked about that we were already in Yunkai? Did we get that wrong?
Right. Well, they were
in Astapor and
Definitely were heading toward Yunkai.
Towards Yunkai.
But they hadn't gotten to the city gates, and now they're just outside.
I got you now.
So, yeah, I mean, this is really just a nice setup. I love the CGI. I love seeing the dragons there.
Yeah,
and
the dragons are doing well. I'm on record as being a hater of CGI. I despise it. But it's doing well.
I don't think you can
do the
puppets.
There are no dragons. Yeah, I don't know.
So, you know, she's laying it on thick.
It's fine. Get off my yard.
Yeah, I will. Off the yard. So, good scene. I love seeing the setup here. It's just too bad we're not going to see our beloved Belwas.
I miss the guy.
You know,
miss the guy a lot.
Because in the books, he comes out to the front of the city gates, and he literally pulls out his pants and takes a shit.
Yes.
Out front of the gates and challenges
but
whoever they want
towards the city.
Right.
And says, "Send out your best dude."
So we won't get that, but we may get some other characters coming up here soon.
We're going to miss the scatological moment, though.
So scene 8.
Yes.
The spoiled whore. Again.
Shay.
Yes, Shay.
I'm still distracted by the accent. She's the only one with that accent that we've seen in the whole
thing. Right, and she's from Volantis, right?
Right.
The same place that Talisa is from.
Yes. Well, but, you know, I'm from Kansas. You want me to show you someone with a completely
but
different way of speaking?
But you're an educated fool.
Sure. And you think Shay is?
No.
Right.
And so Talisa maybe.
Is the educated fool, yes.
I got you. Okay, yeah.
But at the same time, I didn't grow up talking like this, you know, but you can find people where I come from that did.
I got you.
You know, from like 5 miles away.
Yeah. No, I had a friend in college. She grew up in Texas, had no accent.
Yeah.
I met her brother, and he talked like everybody you would characterize.
Well, my oldest brother
Texas
has an accent,
person.
But it's not something you'd peg as Kansas.
So,
you know, it's, yeah.
It's weird. Okay, so, you know, whatever. He tries to tell her you're going to be taken care of. He gives her everything that you think a whore would want. Like, right. I'll give you, you're going to have a house, you're going to have servants, you're going to have everything except for what you know you can't have. And that's, you can't be a Lannister.
Right. No, we're
what's
not
so hard
going
for
to get
this
married.
Chick to understand, man. She's getting everything she could have ever hoped she would get.
No, that's exactly wrong.
In this world,
sure.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
She really believes she could be a lady.
No. But what she has to believe is that it's still offensive when Tyrion says, "Here's what I can do for you." I don't mean at all to denigrate who you are or anything like that, but here's what I can do for you. I'll give you a house and
right.
money
right.
and dresses, he says. I'll give you dresses. Right. I'll give. Are you kidding me? This is Torvald.
No.
This is Torvald right
no,
here.
No.
This is, we're back to Ibsen.
Who he played.
Yes.
He played.
He did. He played it.
Which Eric has seen.
I saw it at the campus of Vassar at New York Stage and Film.
Nice.
Very
Vassar.
Cool.
So, and listen, I'm not saying this is how I think. In modern sensibilities, of course, this is wrong. You can rise above your station. But in this world that they predict, this isn't something that a whore can easily rise above. And even if you do rise
sure
to
is.
Prominence,
money,
you
even,
don't
even
rise
in,
to
even in medieval,
the lordship.
Even in the medieval world, money took you out of being considered a whore. So if Tyrion trusted her, he could give her money and set her up doing something. Do you know
right.
what he's saying is, you will be my kept woman. So right. deal with it.
Because he has
and
to marry Sansa.
It. Right.
He doesn't have a
but
choice.
He, no, it's lame.
Well,
because
okay.
Tyrion doesn't know any better. It doesn't mean it's not lame.
Perhaps it is lame. But, I mean, the one yeah. thing that I think Martin did well here is to highlight Shay's point is she does say we could go across the narrow sea. So
yes,
this is the first time where she's actually put forth something like, listen, I'm not being a whore here.
Right.
I
want to
be
you.
With you.
Yeah.
So we don't need all this stuff. We can go across the narrow sea. And I mean, she's not necessarily saying give away the money, but she's like, we could go
well,
be rich somewhere else.
Then he says
together.
Do you want me to be a juggler? Great line.
Interesting.
Something like that.
Interesting line.
Yes.
That's
because
all.
Of what comes next.
So, and that's what, you know, so that was the first time in this sort of interplay between them and her, this argument that I actually saw a little bit more.
Yes.
You know, and thanks to Martin for trying to save this character where he gave her a little bit more from that.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. So we had to take a little potty break there, and we're back. So, you know, just quickly recapping, scene 8 with Tyrion, you know, this is the only kind of love he has, the love of a whore. And it's sad for a guy who's still hot right now.
We get it. You've got a crush on Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage.
Let's move on.
Peter Hotledge.
Right?
All
right.
So scene 9, Bones of the Blackwater battle. We see all the ships sunk from the wildfire in Middle
Bones. Very cool image for
yeah.
the scene to take place
yeah,
over.
Yeah, it's great. And so we see, you know, Melisandre telling Gendry, you know, guess what? Yo daddy be somebody famous.
Right. Why do you think they were looking for you all over the country? Who are you?
Right.
There is power in the blood of kings.
That's
but then she stops there,
man.
Because if she keeps going, that's fucking interesting, man. That's fucking interesting. Yeah, you got to do the t-shirt stretch.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a fun scene.
By the way, do you remember who played the guy who broke into his apartment and looked at the bowling ball all the way through? Like, yeah, woo, what do you think? That
yeah,
guy?
Right, yeah.
You know who that is?
No.
Did you watch Lost?
No.
Oh.
I couldn't get into it.
Never
I tried.
Mind. You dorks all know that's the guy who played Jacob on Lost. And it's the guy
the
who played
blonde.
Yeah, and the guy who played Lucifer all through Supernatural. Anyway, undorking. Let's move it on. Yeah, he's had a terrific. Well, and Jesus, he's had a terrific,
nice.
Very biblical
wow,
career
Alpha
after the whole. Obviously, you're not a golfer moment.
Yeah, man. Isn't this guy supposed to be rich?
What do you think, Woo?
Okay, so, I mean, we find out that he is. And just to tie in from a previous podcast we were talking about, Robert Baratheon did, in fact, sleep with...
Everything that moved.
Everything that moved, but he...
Didn't move too fast, though, or he wouldn't have caught it.
Oh, man. So, he did sleep with somebody, a Florent girl... I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. But he slept with a Florent girl on Stannis' wedding night in Stannis' bed. As you assumed he probably did.
Yes.
So, and this is, that character was Edric Storm. And, of course, Gendry
doesn't
is taking
exist
place
anymore.
Of that.
Yes.
I mean, in the book, there's dozens of these kids.
Yeah, and all kinds all of black-haired. The seed is strong.
So it's interesting where they're going to go with this.
Jon Arryn. The
seed is
strong.
Where are they going to go with Gendry?
Well, we'll see. They're about to land in Old Storm's End.
Maybe he will have a lady love.
All right, moving on.
So scene 11, Jaime visits Brienne. You know, and it's a nice little moment. I mean, my big takeaway here is Brienne says, "Thank you, Sir Jaime."
Right. You know. It's pretty huge.
I mean, I think this is really a nice setup for, you know, her saying Sir Jaime buys her a save, a get out of a bear bait free card.
Right. And this scene leads right into the stuff with Qyburn, who seems to be looking for some sort of redemption, you know, an ongoing thing that we'll get to in a second, I'm sure.
Qyburn's redemption?
Redemption as a theme, as an ongoing theme. Qyburn and Jaime have this conversation about who's killed more people and who's saved more people.
Right.
And I like how Jaime ends it. He very, very matter-of-factly wins this argument.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it could have been, I loved Qyburn's bead of thought there with, you know, have you ever saved anybody?
Yeah.
I'm a doctor.
Right.
And Jaime's like, yeah, 500,000.
Yeah.
Whoa. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and then, you know, so moving on to scene 13, you know, Dean can still get it up.
Yes, he can.
And I mean, if there ever was a gratuitous sex scene or incest booby scene.
This is it. This is what I'm talking about. This is the exact thing I'm talking about.
I mean, I was hoping my
two
wife
women
didn't walk
but
in.
That's
on
what
this
I'm saying. This is the ultimate boring male fantasy. Yeah.
Right. I mean, in true strip club fashion, where it's well, I can't touch it, you know, so whatever.
I've never seen anything like that before. Oh, my gosh. Can you? Oh, right. You're the best. Oh, pick.
I mean,
yeah.
So obvious. The whole time
it'll
it was going on,
there.
All I could think of is I've had bad days that are
not
nearly as bad as this.
Yeah.
And in those days, the last thing in my mind would be wanting to get it on.
Right.
So these two chicks could have done nothing for me if I had been through what he had been through. Because I'd just be like, I got other things on my mind, ladies.
Right. Yeah.
Like, how the fuck do I get out of this place?
Right.
But, you know, so we get the horn, which that horn now is like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah.
Anytime you hear this, you know, nothing good is going to happen.
No, absolutely
and,
not.
Wow, almost the worst thing that could happen does. I mean... He gets a jump cut. I mean, he's in the Varys Club now, right?
Yeah.
And so...
I see where you're going. Ask the question.
Any redemption here for Theon?
Okay. Redemption? No.
Okay.
Do I think he's paid the price? Sure.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, this is... No, there's no redemption for this guy.
Man, there it is.
No.
It's like a slow bubble.
No.
I thought we were going somewhere else.
No, there's no redemption for this guy. Whatever happens to him is too good. That said, do I want him to go through this? No. All right, moving on.
Yeah,
no redemption.
On. No redemption. I'm getting a little bored with the torture stuff. Because I know where it's going. So, right. You know, it's like when my little girl's reading and, you know, it's like, come on, you said the word five times. It's the same word. Say it.
Yeah, you're a wonderful parent.
Yes.
All right. So I can see what you're saying. It's a little long. That said, I like to say that said, by the way. Because I like to say what we've said, then say that said, and then say something else.
Right.
So there's something else in this moment is that if they had treated Reek, this character, the way they had in the book, we wouldn't need to go through all of this.
Mm, right.
You need one scene like that.
Right.
You know.
Right, right.
So I'm hoping they'll get past it and get to the point where we see who the hell this guy is.
Basically. And, you know, I have a short attention span, and I'm starting to forget
everything,
all the bad things that this guy has done, and now I'm just remembering, oh, this is a guy who's been tortured over 7 episodes.
Right.
That's all I'm remembering.
Right.
Okay, so moving on to scene 14, we have John and Ygritte again. You know, they argue and then they make out about it.
Well, yeah, that's what you do.
So, you know, whatever. I don't think anything else. We have the English lesson, so she learns what certain things mean and what they are.
Well, and I think we have an interesting point that we talk about, which is that John still says you when he's talking about the wildlings.
Yeah. Yep.
He says, you guys are going to do this. You all are going to do this.
Which is tipping your hand.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty dumb.
You know, it's a big smile on your face when you have pocket aces.
Yeah. I've never had pocket aces.
Really?
Yeah.
You're lying.
I probably have. I've never won with pocket aces.
Oh, okay. That's a big difference.
Because I don't play for high enough stakes. You know, the jackasses I play with, they're like, yeah, I'll go ahead and lose
$5. Two, three, good.
Yeah, it's fine. It's $5. What do I got to worry about? No, I lose. I go down to the bar. Big whoop.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, really all we see is that John is concerned. You know, you guys are going to get killed. We're better. We're trained, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she makes out with him to try to change his mind.
Yeah. And he wants to rip a silk dress off her. Yeah. All right, moving on.
So scene 15, we have Osha has added about the dreams. You know, she's tired of this stuff. She wants to know what's going on with the green dreams and what she...
And
what...
she doesn't like the children all talking to each other.
Yeah, she's
just
feeling,
out of earshot.
Left out.
She is a little bit.
You know, she's been protecting them from the beginning. You know, she's stuck her neck out.
I'm not quite sure what they're setting up with all this, except giving Jojen a reason to explain what's going on.
I mean, and this is,
Hodor be Hodor and say Hodor.
Right. You know. And they don't really.
Hodor.
If you read the books, it's really drilled home.
Yeah.
About the Hodor.
Hodor.
And,
so he's like Timmy from South Park.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
in every way.
I want to talk to somebody who hasn't read the books about this dynamic, because in the books it's very clear, or they go on at length, because Bran has his own point of view chapters from the very beginning. So all these chapters, something is revealed in every single chapter. He learns something about being a warg. He's learning to...
he has dreams where he is his dog.
Right, and he slips further and further. Like, there's points where they have to, like, draw him back. And by this point in the book, he's done some other things that are very questionable.
Yes, morally.
Morally questionable about what he slips into and what it's okay to take over. And that's interesting storyline that, you know,
or
they haven't gotten into.
Or whom.
Yes. And it's very interesting storyline that I guess they don't have time, or they've just decided it's not important, they'll get to later.
Yeah.
But it makes this storyline interesting in the books, and it just isn't for me in the show.
Agreed. Can you hear me in your little headphones?
Yeah.
And I sound all right?
Very well.
All right. Try not to be too loud. Thank you.
So scene 16, A Man with No Hand, you know, we hear about how Qyburn lost his chains.
Yeah.
And this is sort of, you know, what we were talking about. We already alluded to, cause this is actually where Jaime gives his great line. And, you know, what's interesting here is, you know, this is where Jamie decides to be a knight. After all, we have a bit of gallantry.
Right.
He's really decided, you know, because before we saw inklings of it, you know, and it's that, what I liked about showing the inkling is in real life, there's moments of thinking about doing the right thing.
Yes.
The right thing, you know, the right thing when it's hard, when it's not easy.
Right, which is the only time it matters.
Right, when it, exactly.
How deep was that?
Nice.
Thank you.
I've never gone that deep.
There can be no bravery without fear.
So, you know, we see him finally decide, you know what? She's worth it.
Right.
And just a little side note here.
Hit me.
This isn't in the books.
At right.
At least not now. But I imagine Cersei being killed. And again, this isn't in the books. I'm not giving any spoilers away. I imagine
this
Cersei
is just your dream.
This is not a dream. Just
fantasy.
You know, like the things that hit me as I see things.
You call them like you see them.
Right. I'm not thinking about it or asking. It just pops in my head.
Yeah. Why don't you bring it out your mouth?
Yes. Bring it out my mouth.
Like
bring it out my mouth.
Like a little bit of vomit. Why don't you bring it all out?
So I see, you know, like years down the line here, maybe Jamie and Brienne are kind of, they're hooking up. They're done. He's done with fucking his sister. Maybe
why
he's
did
just...
it take you so long to say that? I mean, of course, that's what we all see.
Oh, really?
That's what we all see.
Everybody sees that.
Everybody sees that.
I'm
Jimmy.
Not a unique and special snowflake.
Jimmy, it's not at all surprising that there are two people, a man and a woman, in a world where we haven't really seen any homosexuality. They're alone. You expect the two of them to get together eventually. He'll look past the surface failings that people might see in her, right. And she'll discover the unique snowflake he is inside.
Well,
and
she already
get
has.
Together.
She knows that he's. I mean, you save it. Somebody saves you from a bear.
Yeah,
trap.
I don't know. She's initially probably a little pissed because I don't need your damn help.
Yeah, no, I will not get behind you.
Yeah,
she's very.
Well, he's got
happy
one hand and
guy.
No weapon. You know, she's going to run behind him. Come on.
Right. So, and that brings us to the Bear and the Maiden Fair.
It does.
Which was the...
Bart the Bear Jr.
Right. And if
but
you read the
books...
But a cousin,
so probably Bart the Bear right. the second.
Bart the Bear the second.
Yes.
You know, Eric and I talked about this last episode. We saw the pink dress.
Yes.
We knew where this might be leading.
Yes.
Because of that pink dress, it led us exactly where we wanted.
To a pit with a bear and
a
lady
with
a wooden sword.
And this is Jamie's turning point. I mean, everything up to here, we've seen inklings of what he could be, but this is Jamie has...
given up of himself.
Stuff. Right.
For nothing but the good of another person.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about this redemption thing. What he does here doesn't erase what he's done in the past, but when people do bad things, you have the option of continuing to do bad things and not acknowledging what you've done, or you can stop doing those bad things and do something different with your life. And, you know, Jamie is Jamie Lannister, but at this moment he's done something that is going to take him in a different direction. We don't know ultimately where. He could return to being a douchebag.
Yes.
But at this moment, another person has affected him in a way that has made him want to risk himself. And not because he's suicidal, because he wants to save somebody else. Because he believes that Bryn's life is worth Brienne.
Hi, Bryn. How you doing?
Brienne's life is worth saving.
Yes.
And
which is huge.
I love that.
I couldn't agree more. It's, you know, it's a great look at what we're going to get from the character of Jamie and
right.
what we didn't expect.
Right.
So, bravo, George R.R. Martin. And let's
right.
see what happens next.
So, that was episode 7
that was
of
very
Blazing
long.
News.
That was a long episode, brother.
1 hour, 18 minutes.
Oh, that's not as long as I thought.
We've done that before.
Yeah.
So, it's not the first time.
So, you're welcome, and we're sorry.
Yeah.
And who are you?
Right.
And where can I find you?
I'm Jimmy G. You can find me on Twitter at The Lazy Muse.
Mm-hmm.
And this is...
Eric Grattan. You can find me on Twitter at Totally Kidding. And you can read my twice-weekly column at www.pinetarpress.com. The column is called Obstructed Review.
Right.
It talks about whatever the fuck I want to talk
whatever
about.
Whatever he wants to. Last article that I read was about Mr. Orson Welles. It's a great article.
Today I published one about my 7 favorite food documentaries to be found on Netflix.
Wow.
Yes.
Food Inc. is on there, right?
It is, but that's not one of my 7 favorite.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the cautionary tales. I understand them and I watch them. But, you know, I'm talking about what I love about food, not what I hate about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
As
someone who worked professionally
article.
In the restaurant industry for so long.
Yeah, well, I'm still there.
And really never want to do it again. These are the 7 that make me remember the good times.
Oh.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Yes, seen
it. One of the great ones.
Yep.
3 Stars, which is a good follow-up to that, which is about the Michelin Guide, and they're expanding to the international market.
Right.
I also highly recommend Kings of Pastry. Terrific, terrific movie.
Nice.
What are the other ones I mentioned? The 2 semi-downers that I do talk about are Pressure Cooker, which is kind of great, and The Harvest. But I wholeheartedly denigrate and am disinclined to ever watch or recommend anything approaching reality programming for
food. Yeah, whatever.
So goodbye,
so,
everyone.
So anyways, read this article. I mean, read this. Really, go to Pine Tar Press and read this. And do yourself a favor and go through the links. As we mentioned before, don't open them all at once because I tried that. Not all at once, but just opening them all.
Shut down your computer.
Shut down your computer, but...
Unless you have
what I have, which is
the brand new MacBook Pro.
Right, right. If you're all fancy and you can afford a new computer, fine. But these links really, it'll take you a lot longer to read the article because it'll take you to videos, it'll take you to other articles. And it's just, you know, it's a labor of love. And it's a fun way to experience sort of the things that Eric appreciates. And that's at Pine Tar Press, Pine Tar Press. .com.
I believe I headed off your only complaint from my Orson Welles article because of a hidden Easter egg link in there that actually spoke to what you were going to complain about.
So, and read that all the way to the end because it's one of the very last links. And when I was reading, I was like, I can't believe he's going to talk about Orson Welles and not bring this up. Because it's tragic.
It is. but it's also wonderful.
It's wonderfully tragic that this is one of Orson Welles' last.
Oh, it's a scene between Orson Welles and Leonard Nimoy.
It's his last thing that he did, and then he died. We love that you're listening. If you have any comments, please go to theverylazymuse@gmail.com. You can submit anything you want. Please subscribe, comment, give us stars.
You guys are too fucking long.
Yeah, we're
too long.
Why are
you guys so fucking long?
Anyways.
You're not funny at all.
And no, we're hilarious.
That's true.
And you can find us at Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/thelazymuse, we have a Facebook page.
We have a Facebook page?
So, you know, we're everywhere.
I didn't even know we had a Facebook
page. We are going to take this world by storm. So, once again, I'm Jimmy G.
I'm Eric Grattan.
This is thelazymuse.com. We have a bonus episode coming later this week. Thank you for listening. We'll talk at you later.
Bye-bye. Never underestimate a complicated